This is from Sponsoring In, and it's the only book, I think, that CHEL has published thus far, isn't it? And this is number 2 on page 11. It says, the food plan. Let your sponsee know that since CHEL members weigh and measure their food, he or she will need to get a food scale, measuring cups and spoons. Escort your new sponsee to the literature table, which is in our hospitality room. Your sponsee needs to purchase the Forever Abstinent Gray Booklet, which outlines the CHEL food plan and guidelines. Since newcomers must have a sponsor to buy the booklet, you will need to let the literature person know you are the newcomer's sponsor. Instruct your sponsee to read the booklet from cover to cover and jot down questions to ask you later. Point out a few important highlights in the food plan, such as there are no grains other than the oat bran in the first 30 days and no sugar or flour in any of its form unless they are listed fifth or lower in the ingredients listed on the food labels. So that's all I have to say. The format is that each speaker is going to share for 15 minutes on their specific section of the booklet. If you have your gray booklet, that's great. You can go through it with us. If not, if your sponsor's here and you'd like to be escorted or escort them to your to the literature table, Greg is over there, and he'll help you with your literature. 15 minutes for each, and then we'll open it up for questions afterwards. Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Pamela. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Pamela.
It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. I've been in the program and abstinent for 21 years, 2 months, and 24 days. I've been maintaining about a 90-pound weight loss for over 20 years, and I sponsor on all levels of the program. I was in program when Forever Abstinent was developed and written. I was on the committee that edited the first Forever Abstinent, and that does not make me an expert on Forever Abstinent. It just makes me old. my section of this book is the first 9 pages. I want to give you just a little bit of history about it for those of you who don't know. Before we incorporated as Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how we were the HOW concept, but we were part of our sister 12-step program. And our food plan was a little trifold. When we separated and formed our own fellowship in 1996, there were about 7 7 HOW food plans around the country. And they were basically the same. They varied in certain areas. When we developed our own fellowship, we, of course, needed a universal food plan. So these 7 disparate food plans were all incorporated into one document, which is a program for those who wish to be forever abstinent, guidelines for those seeking abstinence, the CHEL way. And the title, somebody recently said that they felt the title of the book was sort of unforgiving, you know, that you have to be forever abstinent to use this book. But the title is For Those Who Wish to Be Forever Abstinent. And I just heard in our wonderful panel earlier, someone said that his hope is to always be abstinent, to die abstinent, and that's sort of what this is, the wish to be forever abstinent. Also, there are various updates to this book. We, the delegates, you all have intergroup reps who then become area, some of whom become area reps, some of whom become delegates who go to the World Service Business Conference. They are the ones who decide when this book will be changed. And so, again, they are all of us sitting here, whoever we may be, can end up being a delegate. It's not some unknown little group somewhere. And periodically, this has changed. Forever absent has changed. For instance, a few years ago, it was changed to say that we could have a portion of vegetables with our breakfast and delete that amount of vegetables from our lunch or our dinner, and that was changed. So there have been various changes in this over the years, which means that there are various versions of forever abstinent floating around. So I bring that up because it's really important for all of us to all be on the same page and to all have the same most current version of forever abstinent, because the delegates, again, all of the delegates from you, from the floor, the delegates are the group conscience of CIHOW as a whole. So an important thing, I believe, for each of us is to always look at the lower right-hand corner of the cover of this book, which gives a revision date. And that usually the revision date will be July, because that's when the World Service Business Conference is held. The current version, however, revision date is March 2015, and that means that if you have a version of this book that has a prior revision date, there's been some small change. And in this case, the small change was that there was an error in the metric conversion table. And that was and that was corrected. And but anyway, so do always look at the lower right-hand corner of the cover to see when the revision date was. And then there will also be a print date, which will vary. The print date isn't as important as the revision date. So that is something that we should all look for in this book. Then on the inside cover is the CIHOW concept. And that's on the inside cover of all of our literature, the CIHOW concept, because that's who we are. We are Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the HOW concept. The HOW stands for the HOW concept. We just say CEA HOW. But it's very important that we include the HOW when we're talking about our program, because the HOW concept defines us in the 12-step community. And It's basically who we are. So the CIHOW concept is on the inside front cover. Then, we come to the first section of the book, which is seeing things more clearly, and it talks about the history of CEA HOW and the history of the development of our food plan. And a couple things that I've highlighted in this are Dr. William Silkworth, who wrote a preface to Alcoholics Anonymous, wrote, "The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. For the alcoholic, this seems self-evident, just don't drink alcohol. But for the food addicted or the compulsive eater, the solution becomes more elusive." And I've certainly found that true. One of our pieces of literature, an abstinence model, which is a wonderful piece of literature. It has questions in it if you haven't used it or given it to a sponsee. It's a great piece of literature. One of the things that piece of literature says is that in our father program, it says we have to learn to live without our addictive substance. In CIHOW, we have to learn to live with our addictive substance, and that's really hard. You know, that's really hard. Every day, three times a day, I have a weighed and measured meal, which is a gift. The weighed and measured meal is a gift, but I hate to stop. I really hate to stop. So, so I have to learn to live with this. And this page one goes on to give additional history about the doctor whom Bill, or father, the priest, Father Ed Dowling, whom Bill knew, and tried to work our father program on his food issues, on his sugar and flour issues. Didn't work. You know, well, it did work. It did work for him for a while. But I have found, and I think many of us in these rooms have found, that there are various 12-step programs for a reason. We're not all in the same father program, because it doesn't work if our substance is different and if our experiences are different. So the importance of this book is that it helps me live my life with my addictive substance. And it says, the program presented in this booklet vaguely resembles the original program of eating, which many people may be familiar with, the gray sheet. However, there were, of course, disagreements, and there were various food plans were developed for earlier 12-step food programs, and that didn't work because, again, there wasn't that singleness of purpose and that unity. And that's why Forever Abstinence works for us, because we all follow this food plan. We all stay within the parameters of this food plan, but the flexibility to me is astonishing within the parameters of this food plan. We all eat differently. I was just talking with some people earlier about favorite things to eat, and you know, sometimes you share with a fellow what you used to love to eat or what you used to, and their face just goes, ooh, you know, because we all have our own unique issues with food. But we can do that, and that's what I love about CEA How, that following this food plan, my eating can be very different from yours, but it falls within the parameters of this food plan, because this is a plan for living in the world. It doesn't put me in a little box. It doesn't say I have to eat exactly the way this guy eats, or it allows me to eat as I want within the parameters of this food plan. And then they talk about binge eating. Foods high in sugar and flour are what most of us turn to when we overeat. However, in a pinch, a large quantity of anything, even green beans or broccoli, can also be a candidate for a binge, it says. And I can certainly attest to that because I'm a quantity eater. And this is one thing that I always say about this food plan. You know, I hear over and over and over again in meetings, I hear people saying, sugar and flour, sugar and flour, sugar and flour. This is not a program of sugar and flour. This is a program of sugar and flour and quantity. Sugar and flour and quantity. Otherwise, we would not need this book. We would just say, I'm not going to have sugar, I'm not going to have flour. But this is the basis of our program. It deals with quantity. It deals with how much of what we can have. And so that's why this book is so critical to us. And, then this beginning section also goes into the How Concept meetings when we were originally affiliated with another 12-step fellowship, and then we separated. And in 1996, we came together as Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How. And I just want to talk a little bit about that history. In 1995, we received a letter from our sister older fellowship saying that it believed that our interpretation of the traditions differed from their interpretation of the traditions, specifically in the fact that we had a food plan, that we had a 7-day abstinence requirement, and that we had our own literature. And the older fellowship asked that if we wish to remain registered with that fellowship, we give up these three things. And to those of us in the program, this is what worked for us. The food plan, the 7-day abstinence requirement. Our co-founder said that we're an inclusive program. We include recovery in our meetings. That's why we have the abstinence requirement and our literature. So a letter was sent out to all the How groups at that time saying, do you wish to remain registered with the sister fellowship or would you like to be part of a new fellowship adhering to the How concept? And meetings took a group conscience. Some remained with the older fellowship. Many chose to retain the See How concept ideals. And we formed what was called the 12-step formation committee, and the 12-step formation committee spent about a year and a half developing bylaws, going through the literature, becoming incorporated, deciding upon a name, and the name Compulsive Eaters Anonymous was chosen specifically, again, to be inclusive, not just for overeaters, but for anybody who has issues with food, for anorexics, bulimics, compulsive eaters, any issue that you have with food. That's why Compulsive Eaters Anonymous was chosen. And so all of the literature was gone through to ensure that the restrictive term overeater was not used. Compulsive eater was used because that is the inclusive word. And so often when I hear people talk in the rooms say, you know, I'm an overeater, it reminds me of those old days. And I think, no, we're compulsive eaters. That's who we are. I'd also like to bring your attention to, on page 5, there's a section on See How It Works, Ready, Set, Go, which says, see your healthcare professional. This book has so much. If you have not read it, you know, really thoroughly in a long time or ever, please do so. It has so much information in it. See your healthcare professional. Do not try to do this alone. We don't work this without a sponsor. We weigh and measure our food. And, you know, I remember early on, I was preparing a meal for my husband and me, and I had grilled a protein, and I put it on our plates, and I'm looking at mine, and I'm thinking, oh, that's about 5 ounces. I was on maintenance. That's about 5 ounces. It's like falling off the edges of the plate, you know. And I sat down, and I thought, well, maybe I should just, like, cut out this center part and weigh that, and then that'll be probably, like, 4 ounces, and then the little bit around the bone will be another ounce. It'll be 5 ounces. And so I got up and weighed the center portion, which was 7 ounces. But I'm so grateful I had that experience because that taught me I have no idea. I have no idea. Everybody says, well, don't you, you know, it's the size of your palm of your hand or a deck of cards or something. And I always say on a good day, I can recognize that, but I never know if it's going to be a good day, you know, if I can recognize that. So it's really important. Be prepared. And again, this is all information that we get from our sponsors. Be prepared. If you're traveling, be prepared with your meals. Be prepared to know what you're going to do. Do not skip or combine meals. Weigh monthly, but never more often. And again, if I have sponsees who tell me that they get on and off the scale 5 times to see if the number changes, you know, I always ask them to just do it once because their body isn't going to change just because the number on the scale changes if they move it to the corner of the room or something. So pages 5 and 6 give a lot of valuable information. Then also on page 7, and this the delegates revised last year, medical abstinence, a very important part of our program. Again, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous is for living in the world. It teaches us how to live in the world, and it allows us to live in the world. It is not restrictive. I believe I've gotten more freedom from following this food plan than I ever had in my life. That includes medical abstinence. It accommodates medical abstinences. It accommodates physical conditions. Any kind of physical condition can be adapted to this food plan. And on page 7, it explains how that works, exactly how that works. Many people have areas of confusion around medical abstinences or sponsoring a medical abstinence. You sponsor it exactly the way you sponsor any other abstinence, as long as the sponsee takes this food plan to their doctor, gets in writing what the doctor recommends as a change. And this is the important thing that it says, medical abstinence, that can be adapted to accommodate specific medical conditions, but changes must come from a medical professional who understands the addictive nature of the disease. In addition, all changes must be consistent with the See How program, including weighing and measuring all food and abstaining from sugar and flour and quantity. And that part is often not understood. You know, I got it in writing from my nutritionist. I got it in writing from my doctor. But it has to follow the parameters of the See How food plan. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Robert. I'm compulsive eater and bulimic.
Hi.
I have been in the program 7 years. I keep saying 8 years, but it's only been 7. It's felt like 8. I am recommitted abstinence of 4 years, 331 days, and I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor, and I'm maintaining 40 pounds of weight loss. I am a forgetter, and I'm also a quantity eater in this program. It's not sugar and flour, it's all of it. If it's sugar, I'll eat a lot of it. If it's flour, I'll eat a lot of it. If it's the green stuff, I'll be 400 pounds because I've ate a lot of green stuff. So it is quantity for me as well. I, like Pamela was saying, this is our Bible. This is, because I'm a forgetter, I, whenever I have a sponsee, when I've had a sponsee in the past, I'm really grateful for, or a difficult one anyway. I'm grateful for them because they make me go to this book and read it. And it is so true. I forget a lot of what the little details in this book are. So I'm really grateful for it. The section two is the first 30 days. And it starts on page 10. And we go to page 11 where it the Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How to the Fellowship of See How. Our recovery in See How is threefold, physical, emotional, and spiritual. By surrendering and working all 12 steps and seven tools of See How, we achieve relief from our obsession with food. And for me, when I first started this program, I took care of emotional and spiritual. And I forgot about physical. I'd done this program for maybe 2 to 3 years without the physical part. And I had lost the weight, but I hadn't incorporated the physicality part of it, which is movement and exercise, which for me is so important to have. And now that I have it, it's hard when I can't do it. So it is a very important part for me to have that part in this. And it's sometimes forgotten, I think, by certainly when I've talked to some of my sponsees in the past. Let's see. I'm going to read through here. This, I thought, was a really great part, too, that I exercise and ask my sponsees to exercise. I have a sponsee on vacation right now, so it's an interesting thing when I get my phone calls. Sponsors may wish to check with their sponsors on up and on up the chain. Sponsors share their experience, and usually the answer from a sponsor with long-term abstinence is, when in doubt, leave it out. If you have a question and someone can't answer it, just do oil and vinegar. And for me, it's been a hard thing. I love food. I always have, and I don't think that's ever going to change. And when I'm in a restaurant and I ask a waiter or a waitress, does that dressing have sugar in it? And they don't know, and they try to give me an answer of they think it doesn't. And they come back from the chef, and they don't have a real clear face on their face, and they still give me it doesn't. I just ask them to bring me oil and vinegar. Just leave it out. It's not that important. When in doubt, leave it out. Let me see. I also want to say, too, the first 30 days... The first 30 days, I put this as the beginning of normal for me. I have sponsees that have said in the past, I just want to be normal. It'd be so great to be normal and eat. And I've let them, I started thinking about this months ago that we are the normal ones. Look at what we eat. This is what a normal person should be eating. The stuff that we were eating in the past is abnormal. Who shoves that stuff in their face and never ends? I was watching television last night, and the background people were all of them overweight. And I was like, we're the normal ones. This country is full of abnormal people, and we're the ones working on normalcy. So it's in the language. Let's be normal. Let's not strive for crazy, because that's what we're really asking for. The first 30 days, getting started. In this booklet, it has the first 30 days of detox, and it's such a great period of time. For me, when I started this program, I was at rock bottom, and I needed that first 30 days, and it was amazing. I was I was really frightened of the whole program because I, when I walked in the rooms, I knew it was a 12-step, and I'm not a 12-stepper. And 7 years later, I'm really proud to be a 12-stepper. It's been a really great journey, and I was willing to do anything because I did not have a diet left in me. I didn't have anything left in me. So this first 30 days was a breeze for me. I also write the reason why I love this program is because of the structure in food and in the meetings. There's structures in our meetings. When I'm in a meeting that isn't structured, I don't feel satisfied. And the requirements that we have to go through is what kept me here and is what keeps me here. Let's see, the sugar rule. Do I have that highlighted? I have a new book I just got today, so my old book is highlighted. I'll read out of that one if I'm wrong on someone. Let's see. Four addicts immediately react. That's it. Oh, I can't live without fill in the blank. When I first started this program, that's the reaction I had. It was ridiculous. I was like, I'll never have Chinese food again. Oh, my God. That Italian thing that everybody loves. What? So in that 30 days, I had to work my mind around that. And in the first 2 months, I was trying to work my mind around this is for life. And after the first year, I realized, and probably even before then, that this was it for me. So it's really true. That's it. But I'll tell you, my food, working these tools and all this program and Forever Abstinent, my food is pretty amazing. I am not depraved. I'm not deprived. I am depraved, but how dare you? So I just, for any newcomers who are concerned, don't be concerned. If you really follow what you're supposed to be doing in this program, the food is pretty amazing if you work to make it that way, because there are no restrictions on spices and things that you can add to your food to make it amazing. You just have to be creative. And honestly, food... I had a friend of mine who's in the program, had slipped, came back, and he said, I forgot how good vegetables were without all that stuff on it. It's true. You start eating cleanly, you start tasting the food. Let's see. I am a condiments person, so there are a lot of things listed here to read, but condiments. Condiments are used within reason. Whatever. I was like, I'm glad I have restrictions on that, because it would just be the 4 ounces and then just a crap load of condiments all over. I'm telling you, I'd be 400 pounds on condiments if I could be. Condiments are used within reason. Seasoning, salt and spices are most often used, but all condiments are allowed, provided sugar is fifth or lower on the list of ingredients. And I'll get back to that about foods that are within the program that you have to read. Yeah, just because it's in the program doesn't mean it should be in your program. I've had to cut out some food. Boy, things just pop. This will be all over the place. Pops into my head when I'm thinking about it. And this sugar-free gelatin, I just read this again, and I keep forgetting about having the gelatin. Because I'm a quantity eater. It's one more thing I can put into my diet. I think I'm so lazy, I didn't want to make the gelatin. That's my problem, of course. let's see. Let me go to chewing. Well, let me jump to the back here. They have a section on chewing gum. When I first started this program, chewing gum was my friend. And then it just became that kind of friend you don't really want to see or like, but you still need to see him. It just was, I just don't chew gum anymore because it just, I was chewing packs and packs in an evening. I just like, as an evening eater too, so I was just chewing gum. Sugar-free chewing gum is the only additional item that we use between meals. Some people have physical reactions to the ingested gas or artificial sweetener. Others find that they're chewing many packs of gum a day. If gum causes any of these problems, discontinue it. Well, see, if I would have read that, I would have stopped it, because I was just chewing packs. For a couple of years, I was just chewing packs and packs of gum. This one's an important one, too, because I have to talk to my sponsees every now and again and remind them that beverages, we drink coffee, tea, sugar-free beverages, and water unless your doctor disagrees. We encourage you drink at least 8 ounce glasses of water every day. If you want milk in your coffee, subtract half of a protein from your daily protein allotment. That I always have to remind sponsees about is the milk, because I think it seems like a condiment to us and we just throw it into coffee without thinking about it, but it is part of our protein for the day. This gives you 1 cup of milk all day for your coffee. The milk must be used in your coffee and may not be saved for a snack. We abstain from drinking all alcoholic beverages. All right. I want to read this. This I'd written. Where should it? It's on salad dressings. It's in the section of salad dressings. The question inevitably, salad dressings. Our food plan calls for up to 2 tablespoons of dressing with sugar listed 5th or lower label at dinner. The question inevitably arises, why can't we have 1 tablespoon at lunch and another at dinner? The answer is that there are often more than 12 hours between dinner and breakfast and the next day. The body has adequate time to metabolize the salad dressing, which is fatty, and at the same time, the fat keeps us satisfied. Since this is not a diet, that pays homage to anything except the addictive concept. This note about using the dressing at dinner is usually the decision point for those who really wish to get well and those who wish to get well on their own terms. In other words, in the case of salad dressings, as well as other things, we need to stop asking why or looking for loopholes and just do it. And this goes for any area. It is, myself included, I had a sponsee who I no longer have, but was always looking how they could stretch something further or do something other than the program that sort of was like it. And it's just all these looking for a loophole as opposed to just doing what you're supposed to do. And it was frustrating, and it's just so much easier for us mentally just to do what we're supposed to do. And if it seems difficult to figure out how to do something, then don't do it. I have one more minute. The first 30 days is such an important part of our program. That first 30 days is detox, and it is getting to know this program and this book. And I think for me, it is such an important thing that if you have a sponsee that's just entering, to go through this book with them, sit down and read it with them and discuss whatever needs to be discussed. In the first 30 days when they're going through this, go through it with them and revise and look at the things that maybe we've forgotten. So I just want to end with I thank you, Pamela, for asking me to be on the panel. Service is awesome. This program has given me so much. It's been 7 years of abstinence, and it's been 7 years of not vomiting. It's been 7 years of eating sanely. It's been 7 years of fitting in the same pants. I always share that because that's important to us. it's been 7 years of my personal sanity. That is a huge gift that I was given by working this program and by having a sponsor and having sponsees and having to give service. If you don't have sponsees, get at least one because you'll want another one. If you're not giving service, do something. Give some sort of service because it is slimming and it does keep you involved and in this program. It's what has kept me here 7 years, all of you, sitting in those seats. So thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am a compulsive eater. My name is Loretta R. Hi, everybody. It's nice to see so many people here. To qualify, I have been in Sea House since its inception. I was here when the border crossed over and it became Sea House and had been OA House. And I've been in 12-step food programs since 1981, some with years of abstinence and sometimes not. I have today currently 4 years, 11 months, and I think it's 25 days of recommitted abstinence. So very, very grateful for that. Very grateful to be given about a third or a fourth chance, not just a second chance, by my higher power. My section of the book is After the First 30 Days. So let's straighten this out a little bit here. The food plan we've outlined for the first 30 days is the one that most resembles the original idea that Father Dowling had in mind. However, the original program had absolutely no high fructose fruits, no grains, and no starches. I find that I myself need a balanced food plan. There are other programs out there, other 12-step food programs that don't allow you to have this, don't allow you to have that food group. They take out whole food groups. And I tried some of those programs, and it didn't work well for me. And I remember one that I tried was you couldn't have starches, you couldn't have grains, you couldn't have. And I can do well with a moderate amount of those things according to the food plan when I'm abstinent, when I'm working the steps and the tools. I don't do well eliminating them out of my diet. And I remember having dreams about knocking over a bakery. I thought, this is ridiculous. I wasn't having a problem in Seahaw. I'm having a problem in this food. I think I'll go back to Seahaw. So that is one reason. I literally did have those dreams. And that's one reason I've stayed here, is because it's a more moderate program. I can live with it today. So the food plan after the first 30 days allows us to have grains. But what it does, and its great wisdom, I think, is it says they're optional. I have a sponsee, and we've been working together almost 3 years now, and she's never taken grains back. She's been at her goal weight for 2 years, year and a half. And I said, you know, you can have grains now if you want. She's got really scared. She said, oh, I don't think I want to do that. And she said, everything's fine the way it's going. And I said, okay, you know, if you want to, you can add, you know, a protein, or you can increase your vegetables or your fruit if you really, really don't want to do the grains, and if you're losing weight. She hasn't been losing weight. She got to her maintenance weight, and she's just fine. She's a very active person. And she's not an athlete, but she's very active. She has a couple of kids, a full-time job. You know, she likes to go walking. She plays baseball sometimes, and she does fine, just fine. That didn't work for me. I had to incorporate some starches, and I have two servings of starch and or grains a day. And it says here it's optional. We can have 3 tablespoons of raw or unprocessed bran. And as Pamela said, we now can commit weighed and measured portion of vegetables, which may be moved from lunch or dinner and added to breakfast selections. And it says right here, after completing the first 30 days of abstinence, each person must deal individually with the question of when to add whole grains and starches. I will tell you that for me, for a while, I was doing mostly grains from my grain or starch allotments, and they started to bother me. First, it was the wheat that started to make me nauseous, and then it was the brown rice, and then it was something else. And so now I tend to lean more towards the starchy vegetables for my starch and my grain. I just have to be really careful with what I take in as a grain and how much of it I take in. And it's very, very important to pay very close attention. In fact, I underlined this. Page 22, recovery requires listening to your body and becoming aware of your thought processes before, during, and after meals. So that's asking us to take personal responsibility. And I found most of my life I ate at people, I ate at situations, I ate because of people, I ate because of situations, and here I've got a program that is telling me that my recovery requires listening to my body, becoming aware of my thought processes before, during, and after the meals. And the way that I do that is I pray on a daily basis. I pray before I have my meal. I don't walk around the kitchen licking my fingers before I'm done sitting down with my food. It doesn't work for me. It works for some people. I prepare my food. I have it there. I sit down. I just recently in this program realized that if the gas man was at the door and I'm smelling gas in the house, it was okay to answer the door and let him in if it was during a meal. There were times when I wouldn't have. So I was able to loosen up a little bit for that. You know, there are things that happen. All of a sudden, in my building, they don't call you first and say, is it a convenient time for us to come up and fix such and such? They just bam on your door morning, noon, or night, and they don't care. So I have to get up and answer the door for them. That often happens during a meal. They're really good at that. They just get me right during my mealtime. So this, on page 22, it says, after conferring with your doctor and sponsor, you postpone addition of other heavier carbohydrates for 60, 90, or 120 days. During this period, the recovery notes how he is reacting to the new foods and makes decisions accordingly with his sponsor. Again, taking personal responsibility for that food, but not doing it alone. And my weight, my food, my body has changed over the years. There's things I can handle now I didn't used to be able to handle. There's things I cannot handle now I used to be able to handle. But I find that to be with non-compulsive eaters, too. We had a very amusing situation with my elderly mother, and we brought somebody in who was cooking for her because she didn't want to eat, she didn't want to drink, she wanted to just let go of everything. So there we had 7 kids in our family, and we were all trying to tell this cook, well, mother loves this, and mother loves that, mother doesn't like this. And what we realized is we were all talking about different periods of her life. It changed. Her tastes changed, her allergies changed, her sensitivities changed, her needs changed, and it happens to me too. Okay, maintenance. I'm very grateful today that I'm in maintenance. It's not a license to just go crazy with the food. In fact, I was rather nervous with maintenance because it means I can add all kinds of wonderful different things to my food plan. But I still have to pay very close attention to my weight. I weigh once a week, and I report that to my sponsor, although I haven't been doing it for the last couple of weeks, reporting that to my sponsor. I've been weighing, and I write it down. Most of the time, it says if weight gain is less than... where are we here? They talk about your... I'm kind of skipping around here. But they talk about if you have a slip, if your weight gain is less than 10 pounds. I don't let my weight get more than 3 pounds overweight or underweight. I catch it, you know, just like that, because it's harder. It's just much harder to come back. The more weight you have on your body or the less weight you have on your body, the harder it is to come back to your even point. So I keep a pretty close eye on it. We have our food plan here, and we have our heights, and it tells us pretty much for our height and for our gender what we need to be eating, although I check this out with a nutritionist. I've had several nutritionists over the years because I've had a lot of physical problems, especially with my stomach. So I've had to go, doctors were always saying, you need to go see a dietitian and nutritionist, because a lot of wonderful things on their food plan that were working for other people were not working for me. For a while, I had to puree all of my foods like a baby food. It was kind of gross to look at, but that's how it went into my body, and that's what I could handle. It took me a long time, years, to be able to eat solid food just like it is in the program, and I had to be very, very, very careful. I was doing vegetable juices. I was doing pureed vegetables. Sometimes I would get those little jars of baby food, whatever vegetables, and weigh them out. And I worked with a sponsor very, very closely at that time. Didn't do it alone. And eventually, I was able to start eating real vegetables and real fruit. And I still have to be really careful with the proteins because, you know, the amount of protein we have on our food plan will send my stomach into a tailspin. So I have found some alternatives. And it says, note, as metabolism rates vary, some members may need to make additional changes in food phases. It is possible that some of the foods on this plan may create the phenomenon of craving in some of us. But Robert shared about the gum. I was a big gum chewer from way back. And one day I started chewing gum, and all of a sudden I have TMJ syndrome. All of a sudden I had the most excruciating pain I had ever had in my jaw. I didn't know what it was. And I went to the dentist, and he said, so what have you been doing differently? I said, gum. I took gum back. Thank you very much. And I couldn't believe it. I had to give up the gum because I had to buy a $250 bite guard because I had wrecked my jaw so much from chewing the gum. Not to mention what it did to the gas in my stomach, and I couldn't be around people. So it's true. It's really true. And I was able to sort of limit it. Like I said, okay, you get 5 sticks a day, and I'd rip them in half and, you know, make sure that they lasted the longest amount of time they could. And then I was focused on the gum. So I'm happy to say to the day I'm gum-free, and I'm also free of diet sodas because diet sodas just set my brain into thinking about sugar. They just did. And I wanted more and more and more of the diet soda. It made me more and more miserable. I had just asked David for this panel. On page 26, it says, in the event of a slip, what to do with your sponsee. And it says, protein units are to be cut as follows. And it says, 1 unit of protein at breakfast, 1 unit at lunch, 1 unit at dinner. I said, does that mean we get no protein? Because that's what I thought. I thought that meant you took away those proteins from that person who had slipped. And so that seems a little, you know, punitive to me. But that's what I thought. That's what everybody who read it thought. They said, well, I don't know. I think you need to be asking somebody about this. So I did ask him. He said, no, you cut down to these portions. So if the person has added more protein to their food plan, you cut it back to the minimum amount, which is 4 ounces at breakfast, 4 ounces at lunch, 4 ounces at dinner. As I said, I have been very lucky, very fortunate and blessed to not let my weight get more than 3 pounds over, more than 3 pounds under. And what my sponsor and I do is if it's just 1 week, she says, well, what do you want to do about it? And I said, let's just 1 week. Let's see what happens. Sometimes it comes right back to, you know, the perfect point. And other times it keeps hanging out and it goes up another pound, other times it'll go down another pound. I don't know if it's my activity level. I don't know if it's how much I sleep. I don't know what the difference is sometimes. But that's when we'll make changes. When that change in the weight is hung around for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, then we make some changes. Let's see. Oh, I like this one a lot. When I first came into OAHOW, we could have anything but white flour. We could have other kinds of flour. And I didn't have a problem with other kinds of flour. But I wanted this program very, very badly. And the program said, if you want to work our program, you get off of white flour. Well, it was one of those foods that I used to battle with. I would say, well, do I have it 3 times a week? If I have it 3 times a week, do I have it in this form? Do I have it in that form? Do I have it at dinner? Do I have it at lunch? Should I have it at breakfast? And I was very grateful when they said, give it up. Just give it up. And I was like, phew. But then when they said to give up all flour, I said, but I don't have a problem with that. And I really didn't. I used to bake some of my own, you know, abstinent grains. And however, that's what our food plan says, so that's what I do. And flour was real big for me. I'm Italian-American. And my mother was a great baker. Not a wonderful cook, but a terrific baker. So if I didn't like her meals, I used to fill up on the stuff that she baked. But like I said, I do have allergic reactions to certain grains, and I have to be pretty careful with that. And so I look on products, and it says whole grain X, Y, or Z, and I look at the thing, and it says, first ingredient it says is such and such flour. you know, and this kind of flour and that kind of flour. And I'm like, where's the whole grain? The whole grain's like seventh on the list. So I have to put it back. And I consider myself fortunate, though, because my food's pretty clean. I don't eat much processed food at all. And we're really, really fortunate because I listen to NPR and I listen to health talk shows, and they're talking about the processed food is where a lot of the disease is lying in. And the more processed food we can give up, the better off we are. And I'm thinking, oh, that's like a how food plan. So I think that's really all that I've got, and look forward to people's questions. Thank you.
I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater. I have 9 years, 16 days of back-to-back see-how abstinence. I've maintained a 42-pound weight loss, although I'm 3 pounds under that and am seriously considering, I'm seriously considering upping my, what I'm maintaining, as I tell people. I sponsor, it's because of conference, I was told. Yeah. it's service certainly is slimming, and at the highest levels, the greatest slimming is possible. I sponsor on all levels. I have 8 sponsees now. 6 of them are in maintenance. All of them have... all of them have time, and they're a blessing. I also am a regular attendee at my home meeting sponsorship workshop, where I have the opportunity to answer questions about the food plan, and also to ask questions of people who have experience. And I would certainly... recommend that to you in your meetings. Information about the sponsorship workshop is available on the website, and it is an opportunity to have an informal session where people with any amount of time can come and ask questions about this food plan or about working the program. And it's been very valuable for me. I remember going in my first year of abstinence, and it's really helped me a lot. As was alluded, I've been involved with World Service, both as the author of changes to this beloved document, and also as someone evaluating other people's suggestions for changes. So. All that being said, it's still important to look at this document and read it and see what it says, because as was previously mentioned, I also have a disease of forgetting, and I think I know what this says, and I don't. I have sponsees who sometimes ask me, can I have a cup of this? And my first response is, oh, yes, or oh, no. And in my experience, the best response should be, what does your food plan say? Because this is not David Howe, this is C. Howe. And this also helps my sponsees to become more familiar with the food plan themselves, so they in turn can share it with new people. And feel comfortable about it. So my section is the appendix, A, B, and C. Let me just say that appendix C has the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 7 tools of See How. Those of you on the PhoneBridge may well rely on this to participate in readings during meetings, but those of you who mostly go to face-to-face meetings, if this is, you know, in your car or in your bag, and someone has forgotten a format, you can kind of punt by getting the readings from this, and it can be very life-saving in that way as well. So it's important to read this with a sponsor at the beginning and with sponsees later when you have the privilege of being a sponsor. There was a section earlier on about learning about fractions. It's okay to mix and match, 1 ounce of cheese, 2 ounces of meat, you know, is 4 ounces. It's good to brush off the old whatever grade that was, where you figure out 1/8 plus 1/1/2 plus this that equals and if you are not as comfortable with math as your sponsees seem to be, have them explain it to you. So, everybody's responsible for their own abstinence. Under the 4 ounces cooked, all meats, they're all intended to be cooked. Earlier in the section, under the sugar rule, it said to read labels. My experience, I tend to buy the same things all the time. I get comfortable with stuff. I've read stuff. I look at it. I found what I like. You know, I've read. I look meticulously down for things that are in parentheses. I treat. You know, I go. I become somewhat meticulous about that. I look for sugar. I look for flour. I look for maltodextrin, agave nectar, whatever it may be. There's some of the newer versions of this have a more expanded, modernized list of sugar, and we want to avoid sugar. We want sugar to be fifth or lower, so as not to inadvertently trigger the phenomena of craving. I sugar gets in my body, and I'm off. I'm off to the races, and I have no idea how long it'll take me to get back here. I'm in my first abstinence. It took me 44 years to get to my first abstinence. The disease is progressive, but I don't know if it's that progressive, and I don't want to be here 22 years later, you know, on day one. I want to keep what I have. Let's see. Pretty much all fruits are included. The quantities are listed. The other thing from earlier on in Robert's section about the food letter, one thing that I find so valuable is the last paragraph of the food letter. On page 12, we are each responsible for our own abstinence and our own recovery. Our abstinence is between us, our sponsor, forever abstinence, and the maintenance plan based on forever abstinence, abstinent, and our higher power. Our recovery is a mutual gift between us and our higher power. There will always be something that is not here. If it's not here and your sponsor doesn't know about it and their sponsor doesn't know about it, as was said, leave it out. Sometimes I have asked sponsees to do research, read what the ingredients are, look on the internet, tell me about it, and we'll talk about it. And decide whether it's an appropriate thing for them to eat. But in consultation with somebody who does not have your own disease in operation, we have a disease of perception, and my disease of perception is out to fool me into losing my abstinence. It's not out to lose somebody else's. So... canned, dried, and mixed fruit. Be careful with sugar. Often it's best to just stick to fresh or frozen, in my experience, but of course canned is fine as long as it meets these requirements. My point earlier about always checking labels and always being familiar with things is sometimes manufacturers change the ingredients. The same thing comes up, and cane syrup solids come up third instead of fifth, like they did the last time I looked at it. And if I find that out before it goes back to the store, it's not cool anymore. I think it's the same, but that's my safety. That keeps me safe. It's, who knew the appendix could be so interesting? Also about cups versus ounces. I've had some people worry about, well, you know, I had two pieces of chicken and they were way more than 4 ounces. It's like, why are you trying to be better than the food plan? It says or. It's your choice. If you want to weigh out 4 ounces of protein, chicken, rather than having two pieces of chicken on the bone, that's your choice. Either choice, if it is committed to your sponsor, if you're not trying to pull a fast one on yourself or your sponsor, is fine. May you lose weight more slowly? Sure. Is something healthier than others? Maybe. This is an anonymous program. I personally am not a physician. If I were a physician, I wouldn't be writing myself prescriptions, or else I'd be speaking to you from the state of California's guest facilities. The dreaded finger foods. So we want a definitive answer on what finger foods were. I was talking with Robert before the meeting. We were checking to see whether we had the latest version of this, and I didn't. And it was, I had crossed out the error that I had discovered thanks to a sponsee. Finger foods, it lists on 32 one tomato, one carrot, one zucchini, one pickle, one piece of rutabaga, one raw vegetable. And then thinking about rutabagas and trying to peel and chop them, I thought, well, maybe finger foods are things that you're in danger of chopping off a finger if you're trying to deal with. But actually, they are intended to make it simple. I mean, the spirit of this is what makes it easy. I have this and this and this. This is my opinion on this, and it seems to be a way of eyeballing a weighed and measured amount of vegetables, and it specifically is listed here. Frankly, I think it's a holdover from an older version of what used to be done. But be that as it may, it is in our food plan right now. The condiments are listed. I suggest to my sponsees half a cup of tomato sauce or a half a cup of salsa, not a half a cup of this and a half a cup of that and a half a cup of that and a half a cup of that and a half a cup of that. It's like, do you really need all of that? It's fine to like mix things up, have a little bit of this, have a little bit of that, but isn't half a cup really enough with all the other things that you're getting? Not really, says the voice of, all right, good thing I don't sponsor you. Lastly, on the maintenance foods only, earlier in our section it said 1 teaspoon of fat. That's sometimes in the first 30 days optional. That is sometimes a cause for confusion. 1 teaspoon of fat means 1 teaspoon of fat. Your choice. You pick. Now, this, of course, you discuss with your sponsors. Primarily, the intention, I think, was oil or butter. In maintenance here, the section includes other fats that become available to you when you've reached your more or less stable weight. It also says that 4 slices of flourless sprouted grain bread may be added to your food plan if you need it to maintain your weight on maintenance. Not, I'm feeling like a party. So, again, so the other thing is I started the maintenance process when I had 63 days. I lost my 42 pounds that fast. I went past what I thought my maintenance weight was going to be. My 1 minute. That was 8.5 years ago, more or less. I got older. I'm eating less now. Boo-hoo. That's life. I want recovery. I want to wear the same size clothes. I want to feel good about my body, which I do 98% of the time. It's you know, this is a wonderful tool. It is not a higher power. It is a tool. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something to find out about and use. Thanks.
Let's thank our panel again for a great job with a Forever Abstinent booklet. This is the time for you to come up and ask a question.
Compulsive reader.
Hi, Lynn.
And I'm a new sponsor, and I have a potential sponsee who I know personally, and she's a chronic slipper by her own account. And she has some concern about starting over again with the first 30-day food plan where there's absolutely no grains or starches. And I'm not sure how to advise her if that's a hard and fast rule or if there's some, can she just start on the post 30-day food plan as a beginning, rather than having to go back to absolutely no starch.
I've heard fellows say, you know, there's no option. You have to go back. I mean, if you've had a slip, you have to start over on the first 30 days. I have also sponsored people who've released almost all of their weight and don't really need to lose weight, and I've suggested that they go back to the second 30 days. It also didn't seem like they in that case, they hadn't left for a long time, but they had just a short break in their abstinence.
Pamela, compulsive eater. I think, as with all things, if it's not addressed specifically in black and white in this book, it is, as the policy letter says, a matter between us, our sponsor, Forever Abstinent, and our higher power. If Forever Abstinent doesn't specifically address it, then it's between us, our sponsor, and our higher power. And as I said earlier, I believe this is a program for living in the world. I'm in this for the long haul. So I'm not going to make it harder for myself or harder for anybody else to be in it and to maintain it. And I don't know whether you said how long this person had been abstinent and how much weight they had lost before they slipped. But I think that is relevant as well. So I think it comes down to the spirit of abstinence, again, as the food policy letter says. That letter has a lot of valuable information in it. Comes down to the spirit of abstinence, comes down to the decision between the sponsor, the sponsee, and our higher power.
I just want to say something to that too, Lynn. I sponsored a friend of mine also, and I don't know if I would sponsor a friend again. And that's just a personal thing, because I think it's slightly more difficult because you know each other so well and you know what you can get away with in some cases. So that might be something to think about too. And, you know, it's really their program is their program, and they want it, they should want it enough to do whatever it takes. So you have to remember that too. That's all I wanted.
Hi, David, compulsive eater.
Hi, David.
I want to thank the panel for your breakdown of Forever Abstinent. I think it's really important to review it periodically, because it does change. There are little things we change every year at conference. One of the difficult things for me is like when someone, one of my sponsees says to me, I'm too sick to have my meal, you know, or I'm feeling nauseous. I can't get any more food down. I can't eat my whole meal, or I skipped a meal last night. And the answer I say, we don't skip meals. A skipped meal is a slip. And they say, oh, I didn't know that, you know. Okay, well, do you know it now? But what I'd like the panel to comment on is what I do when someone says, I just didn't feel like eating, or I'm just feeling nauseous, or I'm feeling sick tonight.
Hi, I'm Robert. I'm compulsive eater and bulimic. I've had that happen to me, and if it is after the fact, I usually have a discussion of why they did that, and if there was some sort of trying to get away with something, then that's different from something else. But if I usually have that conversation that we don't skip meals, and unless your doctor says you should skip that meal, or you have a discussion that's medical, because I'm not a doctor, I can't figure it. If you just don't feel like eating, then that's not the program. I usually have them try to shove something down their throat that's within the program, because there's nothing worse than when you do feel like eating and you haven't eaten that meal, then you have a tendency to overeat, being one of us. So it's, unless it's a medical abstinent thing that I'm told by my sponsee, my doctor has told me I need to skip it. If I feel that way, then that to me is the only way they get away with not eating that meal. So.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. All right. Hi, I'm Loretta. I've had different experiences with this myself and sponsoring. I have had periods of time where I was not able to eat, and I had to call that non-abstinent, not able to eat because of physical reasons. And I've had sponsees call me and tell me that they were really sick to their stomach, and if they ate anything, they knew they were just going to give it back up. So for me, it's a matter of knowing my sponsee, knowing what their motives are, asking some questions. And what I hear David and Robert saying is ask them those tough questions, like, you know, what is really going on here? And most of the time, I have found lately that people, my sponsee that I said I've had her for 2.5 years. She doesn't usually lie to me about this kind of stuff. And if she said, I absolutely cannot eat, or I'm going to throw it up, or I've been throwing up all day, should I try to have my dinner? I say, well, if there's something you can get down that's abstinent, you know, something broth or something like that, that's fine. But I used to insist when I was in another 12-step program, I didn't care how people felt, they needed to eat their meals. And I don't really think that's right either. But I learned through that, and that's just what I would say is, like, know your sponsee. You know, and really have a talk with them, ask some questions. So that's it.
And check if they're an alien, because that's crazy. Never not wanted to eat a damn meal.
I think we're over time.
Well, it ends at 3:30.
Yeah, we end at 3:30. Just one last thing. Not finishing a meal is not a slip, but That's it. You don't get to catch up later. Yeah, that's the danger. So do your best. But if you can't finish it, if my sponsees can't finish it in an hour, I'd say, well, that's it for now. Thanks, everyone, for coming.